You're listening to Confidence on the Go, your go-to podcast for motivation, inspiration, and confidence to help you boldly and bravely take action in your pursuit of living life to the fullest. I'm your host, confidence coach and personal trainer, Trish Blackwell, and it's my absolute honor and pleasure to spend some time with you each week to celebrate this beautiful thing called life. What's up, everyone? It is Trish Blackwell, and this is Confidence on the Go, episode number 159. Today, we're talking about readjusting your goals. I personally think this is a fascinating topic. I hope that you do too. And I need to preface this by letting you know that I'm a serious goal setter. So when I say readjusting your goals, that does not mean giving up on your goals. But sometimes in life, I think there is a time and place for a transformation of goal, a development. And I wouldn't even say it's a changing of your goal, but rather a readjustment. It's a realignment that happens as you mature and step towards something and realize that maybe you need to tweak what you're actually intending to do. I think sometimes we can get so set and dead set on what we think we want that we actually don't end up wanting that. And I think it takes this, sense of real confidence to be able to readjust yourself and say, hold on, let me just, you know, move the needle a little bit, change my angle of approach just ever so slightly. So that's what we're talking about more specifically in today's episode. I'm going to talk to you about how to know when your goal is pure versus when it's prideful and really what the difference between those two things are. I'm going to share with you my three big ahas, so to speak, my life lessons that I really feel like I garnished and learned from running the 2016 Boston Marathon this past week. So it was a week and a day ago, as you hear it. I love running marathons and doing things that are physically challenging because, I mean, I don't like the 26.2 miles that much, but I like what the 26.2 miles teaches me and forces my body and my mind to understand. Anytime I do this, or anytime I have a really challenging workout or something challenging physically, I feel like I come out a new person. I come out in a different level of thinking. And that's why I run. That's why I do this stuff. And that's why I love sharing, these lessons that we get to learn that really are applicable to our minds that we learn because and through the grace of being able to move our bodies. It's an amazing thing. And then finally, we're also going to talk today about the difference between the art of pursuing excellence instead of perfection while still keeping your standards high. Because I think that sometimes we think, well, I don't want to not be so pushed so hard because I want to live out my full potential. I want to expect the best. Well, there's a balance there. So let's dive into the content. But before we do, just a quick hello to all of my Keep the Faith listeners out there. Thanks for being a part, of the community of contagious encouragement. And, you know, we're all across the nation. So I want to welcome everyone who is part of that Keep the Faith community. Also, a sponsorship note. I need y'all to know that I am so proud to be an educator and a consultant for Beauty Counter. And Beauty Counter is a B Corp company on a mission to get safer products into the hands of everyone. And the reality is that the lack of regulation in the personal care and cosmetic industry is astounding, and it's harming our health in very, very serious ways. And I just feel really passionate that we need more voices to join in on this mission of change. And if you want to put your passion to purpose while being generously compensated, then I would love to start a conversation with you about what it means to be involved in the safer beauty tribe that is Beauty Counter. To join the movement of better beauty and safer beauty, just send an email to me, trish@trishblackwell.com, and just in the subject put, hey, I want to talk about Beauty Counter. So, let's talk about now, okay, readjusting goals. Okay, so I think first to know whether you're pursuing a goal that's pure, or if it's like there's a pure and really potential living reason and perspective versus something that's prideful. When I say prideful, I know that I think back in my own life, I have often pursued a goal or really a dream sometimes even. out of the pure motivation to impress other people. Like, I want to feel special. And I've had this, and something I've worked through with in therapy and worked through in my journaling and worked through in my prayer life, is to overcome this desire that I want to prove myself, that I want to earn my worth. And that really comes back to a misunderstanding of who I am in God. It's a misunderstanding of my self-worth and my identity and my value. And so it's something that I still have to fight and process and be aware of today, of going, Trish, like, you don't have to earn this. Like, if you're doing it to impress other people, then you're not going to make an impression in this world. That it needs to not be about me, but me living out the best that I can be so that I'm blessing and loving and helping other people, not because I want to elevate myself. I mean, so I think for me, in learning to adjust my goals and know what is it that I'm actually pursuing in life, right? Like, what actually matters to me? Those are hard questions. I mean, it's a conversation I think you should have with yourself on a consistent basis, and also with your significant other on a consistent basis. Just the other day, actually yesterday, Brandon and I, my husband, we were driving, you know, back from a long trip, and for an hour, we just talked out loud about what is it that we want in 20 years. Like, we've had that mapped out on our vision board, and we've had these ideas. But we wanted to have that conversation to continue to say, has this changed? Has God changed something in our hearts that we think we need to change our direction? Or maybe we've had a deeper sense of maturity and understanding about what some of these goals and desires actually look like. So this, knowing your goal and pursuing a goal, even if it's a lifelong goal, I want you to know that that goal is malleable. That goal has a life and has flexibility. So I think it's really important when you're considering what is worth pursuing to know when to know what really matters. So we got to ask yourself at the end of everything that you do, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? And I really encourage you to take that question. This is a sales technique I used to train my staff of trainers and truly trying to help people understand why they wanted a fitness goal. Like, the statistically speaking, the people who succeeded in losing weight and who kept it off were the ones who had trainers who were able to get them to an emotional level of commitment, but really it was an emotional level of self-understanding to say, why does this matter to me? Oh, and that's just the one level, why. So my trainers and I, we would ask that client the next level, well, all right, you gave me your surface answer, now why? Why does that answer matter to you? And literally, y'all, we would take it five whys deep, and I would encourage you to do the same. And I do it for myself, and sometimes it's just a sheet of paper that I take out and I scribble all over the paper, why, and try to get that first gut reaction that comes out. Because the better we can understand these deep desires, these things I really feel like God's put on our hearts, then the better we're really going to know what is it that matters, what are we supposed to be doing with our life, and how do we live it out to make a difference. Readjusting your goals also, sometimes I have to ask myself in this kind of journaling process, is like, I have to be honest enough with self-reflection and my self-ownership to know if I'm being pure or prideful. Like, is a time that I want on the running course because I want it, or because I want others to be, wow, impressed with me, or, oh, that's interesting. You know, it's so humbling to say that I still struggle with pride, but it's honest. Like, let's face it, we're human. And so when I find myself really with my goal being for the wrong motivation, that's when I just have to pray or meditate on it or journal about it. I have to learn to let that go and sort of, you know, pray away the ugliness of my heart, so to speak. I think I'm currently, as I consider readjusting goals and as you're thinking about what this might mean for you, I'm a recovering perfectionist. So I'm also recovering. I think part of the plight of perfectionism is that we have this deep desire to prove ourselves. We want to make it, we're like, it's kind of like this marriage between proving yourself and people pleasing. So you want everyone to be impressed with you, but you also want to make everyone happy at the same time. You kind of just want, you play God in a way. You think you can control the world and everyone's interaction in it, that everything could just, if you could just control everything and everything was just perfect, then life would be good. And so I know that one of the keys for me in my pursuit of recovery of perfectionism is found in recovering from desiring to prove myself. And so when I catch myself going, oh, I'll prove my, like, I can prove how tall, let me show you how tough I am. Let me show you how strong I am. Let me show you how, whatever, blank, fill in the blank. Like, why? I have to stop and say, Trish, you're not here to prove yourself. There's nothing about that makes changes your worth or your value. Another thing to consider is to have the wisdom to know when your timeline for a goal needs to be adjusted or extended, or when sometimes you just need to stick to it. And so let me to kind of explain that concept, I want to share with you a little bit of, like, I don't know, my race report for Boston. Okay, so for those of you who don't know about the Boston Marathon, it is in many runners' worlds, it's like the epitome of all marathons to run. It's sort of the mecca of marathon runners because it has a pretty competitive qualifying standard. So a lot of runners, their lifelong goals are to just qualify. And then I'll tell you, I've never seen in my life an entire city come together to celebrate runners the way that Boston does. It was extraordinary. I kid you not. There were over 500,000 spectators. Like, that's cool for like Super Bowl, but like nobody cheers on runners like that. You know, like I was running the course, I went, there's no, I think it's, this is one of those few occasions in my life where I'm going to be cheered on by 500,000 people. Like, you know, the 26.2 miles, the whole length of that, maybe there might have been a half a mile, you know, cumulatively, like, you know, a tenth of a mile here, tenth mile there, that the road was not lined with spectators. It was extraordinary. It was inspiring. There were 30,000 of us who had qualified, who were out there running, and then 500,000 people who were cheering you. You start about 24 miles outside of the city of Boston, and you run into the city. And so each small town in the suburbs of the city of Boston that you pass through has this amazing amount of pride. I mean, the crowds were 10, 15 people deep just to, I mean, it was insanity. It was awesome. And I guess, so I went into the race and I've been training really, really, really hard with, of course, my amazing coach, Megan Filino, and her twin sister, Kelly, and training to run a 309 marathon. It's a 7:13 pace. And to be honest, I my real goal is a 305, and I know I'm capable. And I'll tell you, my training, Megan gave me a hard training program. I worked my butt off the past 4 months. I'm in the best running shape I've ever been in my life. And now what you need to know about this Boston Marathon is that you've got the crowds, it's in the middle of the day, which is unusual for most big races. They start early in the day, which is when it's cooler. But also that it's a tricky course because it starts off with some downhill, but in the miles between 16 and 21, when most marathoners are struggling anyways, you hit basically 5 miles of hills, and it's tough. So I trained accordingly. Megan had set up the program to mimic the course, to mimic all of those conditions, and I was on point. I was excited. Halfway through the race, you guys, I felt amazing. Like, my pace was on point. I was a 7:11 pace. I felt great. I was listening to, you know, the perfect music. It just was amazing. I was just really soaking up the history that a participation in an event of this would be. And it was just so exhilarating. And then what happened is mile 12 hit. And I started thinking, oh gosh, like my legs started feeling not just tight and sore and tired, but like shooting sharp pains of like I experienced pain at mile 12 that I should have experienced at mile 24. You know, the kind of pain that you think, oh, okay, great, 2 more miles, you can push through. Well, it's a whole new ballgame when you go, oh, okay, 14 more miles, that's it. That's 2 hours of running. Like, I had to think, oh my goodness, like I'm on pace. This is gonna be my best time. I'm gonna run the race of my life. And so all of a sudden, because I had put these expectations on me, I went, oh, you can do this, Trish, you gotta do this. So I started pushing myself faster, and the pressure started making me feel anxious. And then all of a sudden I went from enjoying this experience to hating every step I was taking. There was a period of 3 miles. I was like, this is stupid. Why do I even run? Like, why am I doing this? This is it. I'm not running again. You know, my mind just, it's so interesting what happens to your mind in races, but my mind went to a place of negativity. And here's what happened. I said, Trish, you are here to learn about yourself and to grow as a human being, not to impress anybody with your 309 or 305 that you're going to run, right? Like, you're here because this isn't a joyous event and this is a celebration. And here's the thing about a race, about anything in life. Every day is a different day. Every course is different. It doesn't mean you don't have an excellent race if you don't do that perfect performance at perfect time. Like, I really had to battle for about 3 miles with this idea of excellence versus perfection, but also the mind of a champion versus the mind of somebody who's going to be a poor loser. And I decided, I said, this is too good. I've worked too hard. And my body, I started thinking, just keep moving. Like, your body might, you know, there's a point sometimes in a marathon, if you're overheated, there's a lot of things that can go wrong. And if they do go wrong, it's called bonking. And like, kind of what happens is your whole body just like, I mean, the lactic acid just overtakes it. I mean, and I've saw it happening around me because it happened to be on that day. The weather was really hot considering for an April in Boston. And, you know, I got to mile 16 and the hills started and all runners around me were getting dizzy and started running crooked. I kid you not. I saw people fall over. It was like a battlefield. And I went, okay, Trish, like this is where your decisions, this is where you are going to live out what you talk about, right? Like, you do have control of your thoughts. Like, you're in pain. Like, you know, you're about to climb hills for 5 miles and you're sort of facing this like, oh, I don't know if I can hit my goal time. So is it worth it to keep pushing myself this hard, so hard that I almost feel like I'm going to throw up? And I made that decision to say, I am in the pursuit of excellence, not perfection. And I'm in the pursuit of doing my best performance that I can do on any specific day and knowing that that makes it the race of my day. That's the race of my lifetime, to be able to be in that present moment. And so I took my earphones out and I just absorbed the crowd. I gave myself permission to readjust my goal when I found out that my pace had slowed down. And I pushed my pace, but there was a fine line between pushing myself to where I would collapse and not finish the race potentially, or maybe even have to walk the last 6 miles of the race, or adjusting my speed to say, today my best performance is going to be my best performance, and I'm going to freaking run this race with the attitude of a champion, with joy, with gratitude, and with this ability to stop. Where in the past I would have beat myself up, I would have beat myself up for saying, gosh, you slowed down, you must not have trained hard enough, you should have done this, you should have done that, all of these fill in the blanks, right? When we start to self-correct. You guys know you know what I'm talking about. Like, it doesn't have to be running, but anytime you in your mind have quote-unquote failed according to your expectations, you start beating yourself up with this internal dialogue of a bully. Well, that's what was going on. And I stopped it. And I said, no, I'm not doing it. I am not doing it. So instead of being mad at my body for what it was not able to do that day, I focused instead on my body and what it was capable. I started going, my legs are still moving. I don't know how they are. They hurt so bad. And then I looked at my pace and I'm like, look, I've slowed down from my goal pace, but I'm still doing way better than I've ever done before. This is amazing. My body, rather than focusing on what my body was not doing, I changed the dialogue and the focus to what my body was doing. And y'all, everything changed. I got over the hills and then you're over the hump of the 20 miles and running into the city of Boston was just this monumental experience. The crowds were crazy. The experience was crazy. Like, I got to see Brandon and Ellie at mile 25 through the crowds. Like, what are the chances I could see them with that many people? But they saw me. They called my name. Ellie was sitting on Brandon's shoulders. It was this very, very obvious way to go, Trish, this is what it's about. This is a celebration of life. This is a celebration of the gift it is to move your body. This is a celebration of what it really meant metaphorically for you to choose the mind of a champion, for you to say, I'm about to climb 5 miles of hills and my body feels like it's going to break apart. But I know that we're only tapping into 40 to 60% of what we're physically capable of anyways. And so you just prove that to yourself. My body carried me with more strength and endurance than I ever thought it could in those conditions. And it was amazing. And I crossed that finish line with this amazing sense of relief. I mean, I'll be honest, I was super happy it was done. It definitely was not, I was not skipping across the finish line. But I finished 4 minutes or 5 minutes off of my best time with my second best marathon time ever on a challenging day and a challenging course. And I was proud of myself. I was proud of myself to say, like, I readjusted my goals and I'm celebrating that. Like, I'm celebrating the fact that I could not pursue perfection. That the pursuit of excellence to me was the ideal perfection for that day. And that's a huge growth in my own mindset change. Like, this is what I'm training myself to do. It was so exciting to see it live itself out. And so I want to encourage you, when you are listening to some of these, I don't know, these concepts and strategies and mindsets, and you hear it in your life and then you start applying it, you've got to celebrate and go, whoa, I would have not had this attitude about this before. That's growth. That's gorgeous. That's beauty. That is living life to the fullest and living it well. And you guys, it ended up being just an amazing day. I met my husband and my baby at the finish line, and we had some friends who ran as well, and we had champagne in the afternoon and had an amazing dinner and just walked around the city. I mean, actually ended up walking additional 14 miles that day. Like, I was just so overjoyed. It was one of those days you look back and you go, that was like a perfect day. And it was so, and what's so cool about it, it is a day that I will forever remember, and I'll remember it because of its imperfection as well. And it was just an awesome lesson to me to know, like, for me, that 305, that 309, why did that matter? Versus just running the best race I could. It's running the race that I was able to do, putting one foot in front of the other, even though those, you know, potentially, basically, you know, in a marathon, you might be hitting about 50,000 steps. It's very easy to feel very far from that finish line, and so to triumphantly not be overwhelmed by it. That's what we have to celebrate in life. We've got to start changing what really matters, because then they, who cares what my time was, right? Like, I know that you really don't care. So why do I care that much? Like, as long as I'm pursuing the best and working myself to be the best that it can be, well, then the outcome doesn't matter as much. It's the question, are you willing to show up? If you're willing to show up and you're being obedient and you're persistent in your perseverance, then the result actually has no bearing on anything. It's the, what are you willing to do in the journey? And then, you know, I'll tell you, like, here's kind of what's cool. After I settled down and I had these, like, big, like, mental revelations and just on this, like, concept of really evaluating my goals and really also trying to learn to have flexibility in my thinking, y'all, that is something, as somebody who has struggled as being somebody who's all or nothing, this flexibility of thinking, you know, and I'm telling you this because if I'm able to start seeing flexibility in my thinking, then you are too, because my mindset, like, I was the poster child for black and white thinking, all or nothing, never going to change. So please know, if I can start seeing some of these changes, then you can too. And, you know, second best time, marathon time of my career, and kind of cool statistic, I got in the top 5% of all female Boston finishers. I'm proud of that. That to me is like, I don't know. It was the icing on the cake. So I share that story because I think there's so much we can learn about really asking ourselves, what is it that matters? And so here in a nutshell, now that you know my Boston story, here are my Boston lessons on life. Number one, goals have plasticity to them. And just because they get adjusted doesn't mean that they have changed or that the reassessed goal has any less valor or value than the original goal. Does that make sense? I'm going to repeat that. Goals have plasticity to them. And because they get adjusted does not mean that they have changed, has any less value or value than the original. My second life lesson that I got from that marathon was that the mindset of a champion in life is that of one who can take unexpected challenge or unanticipated struggle, embrace it, and celebrate it, and then acknowledge their strength in the face of obstacles, focusing on what they're doing, what they are doing, instead of focusing on what they're unable to do. My third life lesson is that putting pressure on yourself or allowing disappointment to be more than just a fleeting thought that you push through your mind does nothing but crush your potential. Knowing that the pursuit of excellence has a variable scale gives you the ability to soak up the experience and to be open to lessons, to open to strength and open to new wisdom. Being a champion in the pursuit of your goals means that your true goal each and every day is simply to do your best, period. Your best for that day. That is what matters. And so if you are doing that, then you can run your race with your head held high in victory. And I really love this, the fact that I told you those 3 miles I really struggled mentally. when I was putting the pressure on, I was like, come on, Trish, come on. You can't let this go. And I had to say, why is this goal? Like, if I had continued to put that pressure on myself, first off, my heart felt anxious, which meant my heart rate was elevated. So if I'm usually running at about 170 beats per minute for a whole marathon, my heart rate was escalating because of the amount of pressure I was putting on myself into the 180s. Well, that happens. You start panting and getting out of breath. I started cramping. I literally started cramping in my ribs, down my body. The effect of stress was so evident that if I had continued to be that stressed out with that undue and unnecessary pressure on myself, then because I don't think I would have finished the race. Like, I think I would have crashed and burned or been one of those people that got so dizzy and overheated and overworked that I collapsed on the road. Like, I'm not exaggerating when I say that. So I really, it was this lesson that, like, putting pressure on yourself or beating yourself up does nothing but not even just not prevent you from reaching your potential, but it crushes your potential. So I love this. I love this concept of plasticity and seeing that, like, a reassessed goal has as much value and valor as the original. It just is a reflection on the clarity and maturity of your own thinking. So I wanted to make sure I share one more way for you to apply this to your life today. So I wanted to talk briefly about the art of pursuing excellence versus instead of pursuing perfection while still keeping your standards high. So how do you do that, right? Like, how can you pursue excellence and not perfection, but still, like, not just give up? Like, there's a very fine line, and I think it's going to depend for each one of us. But the more that we're open and that we're vulnerable about what's actually going on in our hearts, the more that we actually stop all the noise in our life. Like, stop all the electronics. Like, really separate and, like, slow down, and sometimes just let yourself think. Drive in the car with your radio off. Sometimes you just need quiet to be able to think about what is the difference of this for me. But a couple ways that you can pursue excellence instead of perfectionism while still keeping your standards high are to create a mantra for yourself. Also, focus on what you can do instead of what you can't. Celebrate the strength or progress that you're exhibiting versus what you're not. Continue to push yourself. Don't give up. You don't give up. You fall down and you keep getting back up. You go from victory to victory, but they're not step after step. A victory to victory is 3 steps forward, 2 steps back, 5 steps forward, 1 step back, fall on your butt, get back up, run up a hill, feel like you're going backwards, and then, oh, and you're still going, and then you hit that next success. You don't give up. It doesn't mean you give up, but you keep your standards high and you keep going. You also expect excellence from yourself, but know that the manifestation of what is excellent will vary depending upon the day. So some days our bodies are just worn out for thinking from a physical standpoint. Some days your mind can't be as clear because you haven't honored it with the sleep and rest and peace that it deserves. Your mind is consumed with anxiety and it's hard to think clearly when you're that overwhelmed with a dark cloud of burden. So expecting excellence from yourself can be different on each day. There's flexibility in what that looks like. And then also the final kind of way I really think that you can pursue the art of excellence is to relinquish this false idea that you have control of everything. Like, we have convinced ourselves that we're like gods. Like, we can play God. We have control of everything. And that's the people pleasing, that's the perfectionism, that's the type A, that's the I have control of everything, and I'm, you know, then when everything goes out of control, then we lose control of our lives, we lose control of everything, we feel overwhelmed, and we self-sabotage in whatever way. But instead, if you relinquish that false idea, know that it's a lie, that you really don't have control, and nor should you try to. Instead, focus on excelling at what you do have control over. And I'll tell you what, y'all, what we do have control over, it's very simple. It's our minds. Like, I didn't have full control over my body. Like, I couldn't control the level of pain. I couldn't control my full speed. My body at some point takes over, and your body can do more than you think, but my body is responding to what I'm thinking in my mind. I don't have control. This is applicable to every area of our life, but it's such a great metaphor using the example of a marathon. I didn't have control over those hills. I didn't have control over how crowded the course was. I ran an extra half mile in the race because I was weaving around people and the crowds were pushing in so much it was hard to dodge them. I mean, it really was this, like, it was crazy. I didn't have control over the heat. I didn't have control over the fact that, I had this, like, heat stroke, and then I went down and got really cold. Like, guess what? I didn't have control over that. But I had control about what I thought and what my mindset was. And if I kept saying just put one foot in front of the other, that finish line is coming. It seems like it will never get here. It's coming. It's coming, and you are strong and you are capable and you are a champion and you're flexible in your thinking. And that's a beautiful thing. So you guys, seriously, we got to stop convincing ourselves that we've got control over all these things. I think we could all probably cut our anxiety in half and our worry if we just could let go of the lie that we have control. You have control of you and your thoughts. So focus instead on that. Let me share the listener of the episode with you guys today. Our listener is Laura. This is an email she sent me a while back, and I just wanted to share it because I think she highlights something that's my favorite phrase. So, you know, girl after my own heart, I gotta highlight it. Here's what she said. She said, "Trish, I discovered your podcast when you originally had an old show. My old show was called From the Inside Out. While I subscribed to the new podcast, I hadn't been listening, and then I recently worked on a lot of changes in my life to become a more healthy person. I started from the beginning, and then I just finished up listening the other day. I wanted to know the French phrase you were saying for self-confidence. I looked up the translation for confidence, and it wasn't coming up with that. I'm a member of Spark People, and I wanted to use that on my member page. I hope you can help. Thanks so much. Best regards, Laura." Laura, I love it because, girl, again, you all speak French to me. I'm your number one fan. it's the way that, like, oh, God, French just sings to my soul. I don't know why, but it does. So my favorite French saying, and the one that has really, like, if you've read my book, The Skinny Sexy Mind, this phrase was, I mean, it was game-changing for me. It was life-changing. And the phrase is, être bien dans sa peau. And it means to be well in your skin. So if you want to look that up, if you're too as well curious on maybe how it's spelled, you want to look it up, just search to be well in your skin for the French phrase for that. That's going to be that's how they would describe someone colloquially, someone who has confidence. Être bien dans sa peau. And if I want to say I'm confident, I'm well in my skin. Moi, je suis bien dans ma peau. I'm well in my skin. And that is my prayer and my hope for you guys today, that you would be well in your skin. And I think we learn to live well in our skin when we can take that burden and that pressure and that anxiety that comes with perfectionism off our shoulders and learn to live with plasticity and flexibility in our thinking. So I thank you, Laura, for bringing that up, to be être bien dans sa peau. I think it's beautiful. I think it's a beautiful way to live that you can really embody and walk out self-confidence. Couple announcements really quick. If y'all love me and you love the show, well, you will have already bought a copy of Insecurity Detox. If you have not, go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, insecuritydetox.com and pick up a copy today. And if you really love me, the best thing you can do to thank me, if this show has ever been encouraging for you, write a review in iTunes for the show. That's how more people, it's how the community is going to spread. And y'all, if you love the Insecurity Detox and the way it's starting to change your life, let other people know, write a review on Amazon, spread the good word and buy a copy for your friends. So you guys, I hope you have an amazing day. Love the skin you're in today. When you love the skin you're in, I really think you can have the freedom to be you, and you're the freedom to be you. You are free. That's where my phrase, be you, be free, comes from. And when we're free, that's when we live to our full capacity. That's when we can go and love people well and invest in the world and sow seeds that water and grow and change this world for the better. But it starts with, you can't give out what you don't yet have. So I encourage you today, go out there today, be you. Be free. Thanks for listening. You can get more confidence resources at trishblackwell.com. If you love the show, let me know. Write a review in iTunes or send me an email at trish@trishblackwell.com. Take your confidence to a new level by downloading my free daily guide to confidence, The Confidence Roadmap. You can grab your free roadmap at trishblackwell.com/roadmap. And you know what? I'm thankful for you. Yes, you. So thanks for being you. Now go share the best of you with the world.